Greetings once again to everybody out there at TFMR. Hey, what we have here is a special weekend podcast. If you've been around here for any length of time, you know that often, if we have a three-day weekend, we like to bring in our old buddy, our old pal, Jim Willie, the Golden Jackass himself. Well, guess what? It ain't no three-day weekend. I know that. This is only a two-day deal. But we've got the Golden Jackass on the line for you today. Again, Jim Willie is, of course, the editor of the Hat Trick Letter, which can be found at goldenjackass.com. I've had the pleasure of knowing him for, I don't know, geez, 6 or 7 years now, and I know everybody always looks forward to hearing from him. So when Jim sent me an email earlier this week that said, hey, I know it's not a three-day weekend, but I got some stuff we need to talk about, I said, okay, you don't usually do that, so it must be important. So anyway, here we are. Jim, my friend, thank you for carving out some time to visit.
Well, it's a pleasure being on again, and I did make a personal petition for this. We usually go just holidays, but we had President's Day. What a joke President's Day has become. It's a nothing holiday, but yeah. Lincoln and Washington were important people, and that came and went, but let's call this a belated St. Patty's Day.
or pre-St. Patrick's Day. Yeah. Well, so anyway, Jim, I know we're at kind of an interesting juncture here in that you and I have spoken often in the past about how, you know, the world broke, the banks broke. They've been zombies, if you will, since 2008, literally papering over their problems, right, with paper money from the Fed and the other central banks. And here we are now in 2018, and things look a little shaky, and I think maybe I'll just let you start there.
Okay. Well, let me correct myself. I didn't mean a belated St. Patty's Day. I meant a preliminary, early one. Right. Anyway, okay. Here's the problem. After the tech telecom bust of 2000, Greenspan went nuts, continued with the open spigot, Bernanke continued, and they ended up getting a subprime bond problem with mortgage finance. They really had no correct dutiful underwriting. They just figured, well, whatever is an available asset bubble, let's do it, because it buys time and satisfies the Rubin doctrine of buying another day, even though 2 days later is going to be ruined. Well, we didn't fix anything after Lehman Brothers. We basically did to the entire Western financial system what had been done to the mortgage system. Sovereign bonds are now subprime. They're being financed by central banks, primarily the Fed and the Euro Central Bank. They've got horrible deficits. They don't bother with austerity plans. They got very few investor buyers. And the deficits have gone out of control, and so have the debt levels. Obama blessed himself with no debt limit, but it expired in the first year of the next presidency. So they had a big battle with Trump. The sovereign bonds are in deep, deep shit. We're at $20.5 trillion now. And the previous three presidencies have doubled the U.S. national debt. Obama took it from 9-something to 18-something, I think 19. I mean, this is getting way out of control, and the perception now has become that the U.S. treasuries are no longer a viable debt instrument because they can never be paid back. We're going to have runaway deficits, runaway debt burden, the balance, and the perception is that they're not able to pay it back. And here we go, it'll be $22 trillion in a year and a half. That has aggravated the 10-year Treasury. At the same time, the Fed decided that they're going to start tightening. And really what they're saying is we can't do QE forever. They don't want to say that. They don't want to say QE has been a failure. We need to stop it. So they're not going to say that we're going to stop it. They're not going to say it's been a failure. Instead, they're just going to start tightening and see what happens. Well, we got some shockwaves. I don't think 3.0 is going to hold for the 10-year. So you have central banks. The primary central banks of the West are the Euro Central Bank and the Fed in New York. Each has just rough figures. I don't care about exact, but they've each got about $4 trillion of junk in their balance sheets. Now, the pitiful fact of life is that they're not going to be able to get rid of them, the $8 trillion or $9 trillion combined. They're not going to be able to get rid of it without causing either a severe financial crisis or essentially a private bankruptcy. The Fed cannot dump $3 trillion worth of mortgage bonds without causing a disaster again.
Exactly.
A little known fact, Greg, is that when the Wall Street banks in 2005 reneged on behalf of the U.S. government, reneged on repayment of the Chinese gold lease from the year 1999 as part of the Hong Kong Treaty. In 2005, when the Wall Street and U.S. government combined system reneged, the Chinese began dumping mortgage bonds, resulting in a 2007 crash and a 2008 bankruptcy incident, followed by a TARP $700 billion theft by Wall Street, which was permitted. So the trigger for that was the Chinese dumping mortgage bonds, agency bonds. Very little mention of that in the news ever. They were pissed off and decided, and it did make its way in the news a little bit, as minor items. Oh, the Chinese they prefer treasuries, okay? They prefer treasuries. And a few years later, the Chinese prefer shorter-term treasuries. Okay. So they dumped the agency and mortgage bonds in 2005, and Lehman crash occurred two or three years later. Then in 2012, Bernanke accommodated the Chinese with Operation Twist. So they moved from 10 and 30-year maturities down to 5-year or less, so they could just plain old mature and not get rolled over. In other words, they were dumping, but in a very calm and orderly way. The point now is that the Fed and the Euro Central Bank, Euro CB, have combined about $9 trillion. And I believe most of it is toxic. And I don't care that it's sovereign. I think it's sovereign toxic. The Fed's doing experiments now to see what happens when we dump treasuries or don't support them as much. And I think they actually broke some of the machinery in the derivative complex. Mm-hmm. All right. If you look at past history, like in 1960, the Fed's liabilities, in other words, their debt securities, were only 12% covered by gold. And that was a great time to buy gold. In 1980, the Fed liabilities were 130% covered by gold. It was not a good time to buy gold, and you saw the peak in the gold price. Right now, 2018, you have 7.9% of the Fed's liabilities, their balance sheet, their debt securities, 8%.
Wow.
Covered by gold. Again, it is a super time to own gold. The Fed and these Western central banks, without telling you, will operate behind the scenes in such a way with respect to gold to cover their liabilities because they don't want their central banks to go bankrupt. Now, I'm not even sure what that means because they're privately owned, but they don't want them to go into a perilous situation where they're insolvent and can't dump their junk.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you fast forward to the present, and you've got a number of factors at work. And I'd like to focus on the gold oil ratio, because that's what a lot of big financial entities focus on. They don't focus on the gold price in terms of the dollar, which is basically the gold dollar ratio. They focus on the gold oil ratio. Well,
Jim, can I just back you up for just excuse me? Can I just back you up for just 1 second? Because that stat, I don't mean to interrupt you, but that stat you gave earlier about the amount of gold coverage to U.S. debt, and it went up because the price in the 70s went up and peaked, right? I mean, it went when the price went to $800 in 1979 or 1980, whatever it was. It wasn't that the debt had slowed down. It's just that the price of gold had gone up faster than the amount of accumulated debt.
Well,
right.
They both rose.
Right.
They both rose.
But the price had gone so far.
We were finished with the Vietnam War, and we went to other stupidity to raise our debt. But the
only thing that would bring that percentage back up again now would be to have the price of gold go way higher again.
Right. Okay. Right. And that's why the author of that, a fellow named Daniel Oliver of Myrmecon Research, said that if we move back to 133% right now, gold coverage to the Fed's balance sheet, we'd have a nearly $17,000 gold price.
That's what I was driving at. Okay, so anyway.
Okay, so if we move to half that, if we move to 60% coverage, just half that, we'll go to roughly an $8,000 gold price. So the point, though, is that the Fed will want the gold price to go up in order to cover and make not so deadly ugly their balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I like focusing on the gold oil price after I read an article by, they call themselves FFFT, For the Forest Through the Trees, FFTT.
That's Luke Groman's site.
I believe so.
Yep.
All right. As you increase the amount of money, the money supply, the monetary aggregate, whatever you want to call it, if you double it, then you're going to want to see the gold oil ratio go up. Okay? So the gold oil ratio must go up, not the gold dollar ratio. The gold oil ratio must go up. We Americans are $2 centric. The rest of the world does not focus on just the gold price in terms of the dollar. They focus on the gold in terms of the yen, gold in terms of emerging market nations, gold in terms of the ECB, Euro Central Bank, but also in terms of oil in a pure sense that cuts across currencies. Oil is not a currency. Okay, so after the huge amount of monetary increase, big money supply growth, we did not see an increase in the gold oil ratio, so the system rebelled and cut the oil price in half, which doubled the gold oil ratio because gold was kept fixed. Isn't that a fascinating thought?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So the gold oil ratio is part of the financial structure inner workings across the world, across our entire planet, for the financial entities. Okay, so it's kind of like an equilibrium balancer. Now, the central banks are largely led by the Basel Bank for International Settlements.
Right.
They, you know, we get, you know, the Basel II rules that all the major banks must follow. Now the Basel III rules, all the banks must follow. Things like, you know, the banks must maintain a certain amount of capital with respect to their entire net worth. Rules like the banks must stop internal trading on their own accounts, stuff like that. Those are the Basel rules, okay? Well, Basel comes up with a lot of research, and they come up with occasional speeches by their leaders. One quote in 1981 was by their chairman at the time, Jelly Zylstra, and he said the 1960s saw a growing disequilibrium in the international payments, consequent on the deficit of the U.S. balance of payments. The dollar became overvalued, and the U.S. found it increasingly difficult to meet its obligations to convert the dollar into gold. It is my firm conviction that the devaluation of the dollar, combined with a substantial increase in the gold price, as per Article 4 of the IMF, would have meant a real improvement to the situation. All right, so in the face of a crisis, the Basel chairman believes it's a good idea to let the gold price go up.
That was 81?
Well, what's the advantage? Pardon me?
That was 1981? Just want to make sure.
81.
That's right. Okay.
Well, why would he say that? Because there's no big economic drawback from a higher gold price. Now, look what's happened in the last several years. The oil price has gone down, and important research outfits have said, like, you know, at the $50, $55 oil price, something like 80% of oil deposits are unviable, uneconomic to drill.
Mm-hmm.
We got a disaster here. Okay, at the same time, a very important treaty, it's hard to call it a treaty, it's more like a consensus agreement with the United States in return, like as a responsibility for managing the global reserve currency as per the petrodollar. Okay, the Saudis agreed to sell oil in dollars and keep their surpluses in treasuries, okay, and buy weapons, whatever. And the United States manages the dollar as the global currency reserve. And international trade, not just the oil, is done in the dollar. And international trade, not just in commodities, is done in mostly in the dollar. Okay. There's a responsibility that was part of the agreement that if the oil price went up, the Fed would raise interest rates, cool things down, bring down demand for oil, and everything would be just copacetic. And we did that a few times. But in 99, things all changed. We had the Tech Telecom bust, and we went a little bit crazy in looking for a new bubble to blow up. And it was easy. It was housing. I remember like it was yesterday. In 01, Greenspan made public speeches, go out, refinance your mortgage, borrow against it, home equity loan, support the economy, the mortgage rates are coming down, all pay attention, mortgage rates are coming down, refinance. Okay, it was like a daily message for a month, and he was trying to push down the 10-year yield by saying that everything's going to be fine, there's no threat to it, we're going to make sure inflation's not going to be a problem, go ahead, borrow, don't worry about it, just borrow, borrow, borrow. Support the economy. He was afraid of an economic crash. So they relied on yet another asset bubble, but they set the stage for something really important. In the following years, the oil price went over 100, and the Fed did not raise interest rates. Instead, Greenspan made a really hokey comment that all the systemic risk has been offloaded in the form of derivatives. He blessed it. It was something like 2004 and 5 he was doing this kind of blessing. Well, then he left, quit early, handed the keys over to Bernanke because he knew he created a mess. And we had the Lehman problem, the subprime bonds and all that on Bernanke's watch. And the American stupidity has a regular habit of blaming the person who's sitting in office for the problem rather than the person who created it who just left town. So it became clear that the offloaded risk with derivatives was hokey pokey and didn't solve anything. So we're left with the same problem of raising the money supply without lifting the gold oil ratio, and therefore the market cut the oil price in half. When they did so, some important phenomena took place. Lots of countries lost their income from oil.
Right.
They became deficit producers. They became deficit nations regarding their government function. The Saudis started drawing down their treasuries, their forex reserves. Many countries started drawing down their forex reserves because they didn't just see a loss in income from oil. They started seeing it from other commodities like copper. Chile's got a problem right now. Chile. Okay, so by not raising the interest rates, the Fed forced the oil price to go down on its own, within its own structure. And the boomerang effect is that nations are selling off their treasuries. They don't necessarily want to, but they're starting to conclude we can't do anything else. We have no other option. So by not raising interest rates a few years ago, maybe even several years ago, the Fed essentially started the process of removing the petrodollar standard and forcing nations to dump their surplus reserves, dump their banking reserves. They're not selling off treasuries to buy gold. Maybe only Japan is doing that. Okay, so that's an important violation of the contract to raise rates in the face of higher oil price. It backfired. Greenspan promised that derivatives would be the solution. They were not. The Lehman crash of 08 proved that. Then we went to QE and 0%, which is just the opposite. You don't go down in interest rates, you go up to cool down the economies. Instead, now the nations of the world are all a mess, and the Basel Bunch is beginning to conclude the following. This is a quote by a different Basel fellow called the BIS chief economist, William White. In 2015, you know, we're talking 34 years later, mm-hmm. when Zylstra, the chairman, had warned about solution to a big financial crisis being a higher gold price, William White, 2015, said the following. We will need another global crisis and one whose roots can be clearly identified in the shortcomings of the current non-system for this to happen. I suspect that geopolitical issues will trump economic issues. Interesting, you used the word Trump in there, but without yeah. knowing that Donald J. Trump would be moving on to clean house a bit. Okay. White expected a grand global crisis to erupt, describing its financial system as dangerously unstable, with the threat of an avalanche of bankruptcies, which would test the social and political stability. That came out in interviews. Okay, White continued, quoting, the situation is worse than it was in 2007. He's saying that QE didn't fix anything.
Right.
The central banks have not fixed anything. Okay, he continued. Our macroeconomic ammunition to fight downturns is essentially all used up. How many times have we heard in the last several years the Fed doesn't have any more weapons left?
Right.
Well, Basel's admitting it. Okay, White goes on. It will be obvious in the next recession that many of the debts will never be serviced or repaid, and this will be uncomfortable for a lot of people who think they own assets that are worth something. He's talking about U.S. treasuries. Wow. He's saying, between the lines, that U.S. government debt is ready to default.
Yeah.
And I made that forecast right after Lehman. Several years down the road, U.S. government debt is going to default, probably in the form of a restructure. Okay, White goes on. I'm coming to the end here of the quote. The only question is whether we are able to look reality in the eye and face what is coming in an orderly fashion, or whether it will be disorderly. Debt jubilees have been going on for 5,000 years, as far back as the Sumerians. What is he referring to? Well, in the same interview that was conducted with William White, he went on and they had a long conversation, and other research reports came out with his name attached to it. What they're talking about is the insolvency and the difficult situation with Western sovereign debt that the central banks are holding. Now, the Euro central bank is no different. They're holding a lot of junk from Greece, a lot of junk from Spain and Italy, sovereign bonds that are junk. that should be 8, 10, 12%, but now instead they're a fraction of that because the Euro Central Bank is the primary buyer and they're lunatic. They're sitting on a vat of junk, toxic paper. What William White is referring to is, given the precarious situation with all this junk paper that the Fed and the Euro Central Bank are holding, the only solution without any severe economic pain to be wielded would be to bring up the gold price multiples higher and to encourage central banks to buy gold before they push it higher. The exception in trouble is the United States. Where are we going to get our gold? The ratio that I've quoted you of the current year for the United States at 7.9% of their liabilities covered by gold, that assumes they got 8,400 tons of gold.
Oh, that's right.
They don't jack shit.
Right.
They might have 2 tons. They might have 1 ton. I don't know. I'm not saying 1 or 2,000 tons. I'm saying 1 ton or 2 tons, as in less than 10 tons. The Fed and the Euro Central Bank are going to come to the conclusion that the only way out is to buy boatloads worth of gold, let it go up to 5, 8, then 10,000 to cover their shit, toxic VAT balance sheets. Now, if you think the U.S. government debt is not so healthy or a bit dodgy, well, the majority of the Fed balance sheet is mortgage bonds, where they support them at what, the 3, 4, 5% level.
Yeah.
I mean, this is absurd.
Right.
Mortgage bonds should be closer to 10%.
Right. They're priced to maturity because if you marked them to market, they'd be worth nothing.
I don't know what mark to market value they would have.
Yeah.
I just know that the true mortgage rate, given the rate of defaults, given the poor income ratios that are out there, given the ridiculous underwriting that is no different from 04, 05, and 06 before Lehman exploded, it's just not a true rate. Nothing regarding interest rates in the United States is true anymore. Nothing.
Right.
Okay. Now, last point. This is a very important point. Who's running the show? What countries are running the show? This is not a point specifically from the camp of central banks. I've covered the central banks up to this point. There are two countries that are unique, and unique in this respect. They're both economic powerhouses with big economic surpluses, big trade surpluses. Two countries stick out. These two countries also stick out that they're importers for energy. They import a lot of oil. They import a lot of gas. And they both do so from Russia. That's why Russia is the big enemy bugaboo of the United States and the EU, Brussels fascist dictators. They don't like Russia because Russia is the main supplier. These two nations, huge trade surpluses, but at the same time, big energy deficits, big importers of oil. They're Germany and China. They are going to call the shots. They're going to say, look, we don't want to buy your treasury bonds anymore. We don't want to buy Italian and Greek government bonds anymore. We're going to buy gold because we want a real banking system again. That's a powerful statement.
Yeah.
China is going to say something very similar. In fact, it's a rhyming but a more defiant position. We're going to start buying oil in our own currency and then we're going to back it with gold. We're going to start buying oil from Russia, pay them an RMB and have it convertible to gold. You don't like it? Go shit in your hand.
Tough, yeah.
So Germany and China are unique with energy import and trade surplus, and they're going to drive this show from an economic standpoint Because when you get down to brass tacks, the financial system must align with the economy. And right now, the global economy is saying the oil price is too low. We need a higher oil price. But since the money supply has grown so much, we need a much higher gold price to cover our toxic central bank balance sheets. This is huge.
Yeah.
We have numerous researchers out there and the propaganda machines saying gold has no economic value. Well, fine. Therefore, let's use their research and say time for $8,000 gold, time for $5,000 gold as a way station because has no economic impact. Let's just do it and help out the banking system. The bailout to the banking system involves higher gold price. Look what happens when you get a lower oil price. You get huge problems. It's kind of ironic because I remember saying to somebody 2 years ago, you know, the only benefit to my jackass crew of colleagues, the only benefit from the lower oil price is lower economic costs, lower gasoline costs, lower feeder costs for a lot of different things, lower gas price, lower feeder costs for petrochemicals like fertilizer, stuff like that. So there is a lower cost element to the lower oil and gas prices. And my colleagues came back and said, yeah, but wait till you see the problems. The problems are going to be enormous. And we're starting to see that. We're starting to see it in a very big way. Countries are selling their forex reserves because they're now running deficits. And Saudi Arabia can't cut their budgets. They need to increase their social welfare all the time or else there's going to be rebellion against the royals who are confiscating most of the country's wealth. It's ridiculous what's going on over there. They never heard of democracy. What they do is they do handouts to keep the public docile.
Right.
Okay, there are lots of countries that are having problems. I wouldn't be surprised if Angola and Nigeria are having severe problems from the lower oil price. They set up their structural system based on income, and suddenly it's cut in half. They can't cut their structural system. They can't go to instant austerity. Doesn't work that way. So the backfire from the lower oil price has created an unsustainable situation, and now the central banks, the major central banks, are caught between a rock and a hard place with a lot of toxic debt securities, including mortgages, they can't get rid of. The only thing they can do to make things healthier from their standpoint is to buy a lot of gold. I mean, like boatloads of gold, like the Central Bank of the United States, the Fed. They need to get to 15,000 tons of gold. But just to let you know how difficult and intractable the situation problem is with the United States, let me just tell you what happens. If the United States goes to a gold standard next year, backs a new dollar with gold, runs a $600 billion or more trade deficit, and it translates to about 15,000 tons of gold that it would forfeit.
Yeah.
We got to reindustrialize the United States. Trump ran on a platform of a big infrastructure program of $1 trillion. What he found was foreigners told him to go screw himself.
Yeah, go take a hike.
Take a hike. F you. The Japanese said, oh, you want us to invest $1 trillion or half a trillion in your infrastructure? You'd probably steal it, you jagoffs. Okay, so a lot of countries refused the appeal by Trump for a global solution among the community of nations to redo the infrastructure of the United States. And China decided, we got a better idea. We're just going to go full bore on the Belt and Road Initiative. We're going to do the infrastructure you're talking about, but we're going to do it in Europe and Asia. Screw you. United States, oh gosh, and then Jack Ma of Alibaba came out and said, you know, United States, you talk about a lot of investment and you want foreign investment, but why don't you take a look at yourselves? You got $25 trillion invested in the last 35 years in the military, and you got fucking nothing for it. That's where the problem is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're investing in weapons and destabilization of foreign countries. We're investing in chaos, and it's a well-earned name, the King Dollar and the Empire of Chaos. That's not how you support the dollar, because what you do is you invite rebellion, and it's starting in China, and people and countries are lining up behind China within the Eurasian Trade Zone, within the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, and within the Belt and Road Initiative, within the cross-border interbank payment system, the CHIPS, that rivals the SWIFT payment program. They're backing up with SCO, the Shanghai Cooperative Organization. All these different international groups are non-dollar. And now you've got a new phenomenon that is going to be an instrument and a cartel that will unseat OPEC and, I think, put the stake in the vampire's heart of the King Dollar. And that's what I call the Rosneft Oil Consortium. Oh, I got to take a breath.
So, Jim, let's kind of go back to then the two things that kind of jump out at me as we look at the current landscape. Because I've read things, too, that say, you know, what's different right now than any other time, at least recently, is that every country in the world, every central bank in the world would benefit from a revaluation, you know, a new fixed price of gold up, you know,
except
five,
the United States.
All right. So outside of that, then, on top, or maybe we should say on top of that, we've got what appears to finally be coming. You mentioned it earlier. After all the fits and starts and trials, March 26th is the date given for the commencement of trading of that yuan-denominated crude oil contract. And you and I remember we talked whenever the last time we did one of these things, back New Year's, I guess, about, you know, the involvement of the Chinese in Aramco and all of these kind of inwards that the Chinese have made with not only Russia but also Saudi. All of these things, again, kind of line up toward, obviously, the de-dollarization we've talked about. But how would that higher price, if it's detrimental to the U.S. and it's the only central bank only, how would it be? That would be beneficial, though, for everybody else, right, including the Chinese and the Russians and the Saudis and anybody else that has gold.
Well, it is. But let's just leave out the United States for a minute. Countries of the world now have a mechanism for converting any trade surplus they have into gold. They can go to Shanghai. Now, if they've got a trade surplus with respect to China, like they sold China a bunch of stuff, they can take the RMB and go straight to Shanghai and buy gold. But, you know, the reality of the situation with respect to China is they've got the surplus. They've got that $20 billion per month surplus, give or take.
Right.
So the Chinese are going to be driving the process. And I think the big, big event coming is the Chinese announcing to the world that all is well. We're now going to be buying Saudi oil and paying an RMB because we are a shareholder of Aramco. I don't think China wants necessarily to be a shareholder of Aramco because they're lying about their oil deposits and reserves. They're also involved with a very ugly war, complete with war crimes, in Yemen. I've been learning lately that the Saudis are stealing Yemen oil with illicit drill rigs and drilling at the border, drilling laterally.
Yeah.
Like, you know, 5, 6, 8 miles down, yeah, but to the side, mm-hmm, and taking Yemen oil.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Chinese are ready to let countries led by Russia to sell them oil, be paid in RMB, and then countries like Russia can convert the RMB currency to gold. The Saudis can sell the Chinese oil, take RMB, invest some in new industry, according to the 2030 vision from Prince Mohammed bin Salman in Saudi Arabia, but also convert a good deal of it to gold while quietly dumping their treasury bond. And just want to make a point about Saudi treasuries. What was it, about a year or two ago that the Tick Report started having an individual line item of Saudi Arabia? Before that, it was OPEC oil producers. And the OPEC oil producers typically had, you know, $100, $150, $180 billion. But I'm a mathematician. I know how to add. I can multiply two numbers together pretty good. And I know that the Saudis were the number one oil producers for 30 years. Multiply their surplus by 30, and you get on the order of $4 or $5 trillion in FX reserves. Where did it go?
Good question.
They claim now to have something like $150 or $160 billion in treasuries. Where's the rest of their $3 or $4 trillion?
That's a good question.
So, being a good mathematician with arithmetic on the back of a stinking napkin using a crayon, I can conclude that the Saudis made a deal. We'll be part of your deal. We'll get stinking wealthy. We'll buy play toys from your U.S. military complex. We'll terrorize our neighbors. We'll have a good time. We'll build silver Bentleys and put them in the middle of our palaces. We'll build desert Las Vegas strip clubs in the sand. We'll enjoy the good life. We'll buy London property. We'll buy yachts, and we'll put 2,000 royals on $1 million a year stipends. And we'll just keep your game going. And we will agree to putting aside a mere $3 trillion worth of treasury bonds as the core to your exchange stabilization fund run by the U.S. Department of Treasury, which you will use to rig financial markets around the Western world. That's where it went.
Okay.
Exchange stabilization fund.
That's interesting.
Now, here's my theory. When they do the rate hikes, they're doing games behind the scenes. The first rate hike had a reverse repo feature, which basically meant that they told Wall Street banks, give us your cash, we'll give you your treasury. That's why it's a reverse repo. And with the treasuries, you can go up to 100 to 1 in leverage and help us out financing the U.S. government debt.
Mm-hmm.
But the effect is like a Sears Tower. It's no longer 100 stories. It's 200 stories, and the footprint is smaller. It cannot withstand high winds like what we're seeing right now. I think the big shocks going on right now with the stock and bond market in the United States are sufficient to bring about cracks and small breaks in the derivative machinery mm-hmm. operated by J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs on behalf of the U.S. government, mm-hmm. Treasury Department.
Yep.
So, here we are. Let the breakdown happen, which I have been calling for 2 years, Greg,
yep.
The systemic Lehman event, because we've turned sovereign bonds into subprime. We have entire banking systems that are just like what Wall Street was before Lehman broke down. And by the way, any good student of Wall Street recent history knows all the Wall Street banks were in the same position as Lehman.
Yeah.
But Lehman was pro-gold bullish and anti-dollar. So they ganged up on Lehman, did not want them to win on their gold long bet, bought a bunch of their mortgage bonds, like $2 or $3 billion worth. I'm talking about J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs, and never paid for them. It's like putting a plastic bag over the entire board of directors at Lehman Brothers and then claiming they just died.
Okay, so back then, too, if everything is teetering now, as rates have gone up and the bond markets, you know, and the collateral, the margin, the derivatives, everything is, I mean, we're seeing this all play out in real time. Let's wrap by going back to what this Cat White said at the BIS 2.5 years ago. So tie all that, because what you read earlier is he said the crisis was never fixed. And now the next time when this flares up, because it's going to flare up, who was White and what did he say?
The ammunition is used up. In other words, the Fed has no alternatives left. What are they going to do? Lower interest rates? Yeah, what a joke. What are they going to do? Go to QE to infinity? They're trying to go the reverse because even Basel researchers have said QE did not succeed in stimulating the economy, period.
Right.
William White talked about a debt jubilee when it was very well understood that reference to that meant that they were going to reduce the pain from toxic balance sheets, reduce the pain from oversized debt securities on their balance sheet by means of raising the value of their gold asset. Now, little known fact is the Euro Central Bank owns a lot of gold. The Europeans own a lot of gold.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to like seeing a higher gold price because that'll mean the Euro Central Bank gets bailed out. The problem child is the United States. They use their gold and all the stolen gold, like in Libya and Ukraine and even the Saudi gold and all the UBS and Credit Suisse shenanigans of criminality in Switzerland. That was to gain access to the Arab gold in the bullion banks of Switzerland. All bullshit prosecution. Since when does the United States have jurisdiction over Swiss banks? Yeah. Now, they made a collusion deal with the Swiss to steal the Arab gold, and they both stole it together with the Londoners involved. Okay. This has gone way, way out of control. The central banks of the world are going to say, United States, you've had your time. You've had your era. You had 45 years of rule. You had the global currency reserve. Your time is up. If you got a problem, then you need to fix it because you're not going to drag down the world with you. We're going to go to a debt jubilee by seeing 5,000, then 8,000, then 10,000 gold. We're going to bail out our central banks. We're going to load up on gold, add to our gold, double our gold. And if you don't have the wisdom to increase your gold supply and quit lying about your gold reserves for the United States government, then go to hell. Make your own currency. Let it go the way of the Venezuelan Bolivar. I mean, look at the fundamentals for the United States. A trillion or more federal deficit per year, $600 billion, and that translates to 15,000 tons of gold at current prices.
Right.
The $600 billion trade deficit for the United States translates to 70 strategic oil reserves, the strategic petroleum. I've heard some nitwits say, well, yeah, what are you going to do next month? We don't have any preparation. We stole our own gold, let the elites do their underground cities, let the elites do their secret space program, let their elites do all kinds of basic thefts so they could buy property around the world. And now the United States is screwed because we lack industry and have a grossly inadequate industrial base.
Yep.
We need the 30,000 new businesses a year for several years with an emphasis toward export, with tax credits on property and income. And if that means bringing in Chinese managers, then bring in Chinese managers. If we can't manage an export business, then bring in someone who can.
They have more experience at it than we do, that's for sure, in the
prices,
last however many years.
As a result of the intractable situation for the major central banks, the buyer of last resort. Well, since when is that an advantage? They got $1 trillion at the Fed of treasury bonds. They're all going down in value. And when you have these treasury bonds going down in value with rising rates, bank after bank is going to be coming out soon saying, we now have violations of our asset ratios. Then what? They stop lending.
Right. Yeah.
Some of them go under.
Jim,
oh, boy. I look forward to the crisis that comes because I like the solution that's inevitable.
Well, I tell you what, my friend. We are sitting here. It is, again, we're talking on Friday, March the 2nd. And as I look, we got an hour left to go in the New York Stock Exchange session. The Dow's down 150, S&P's about flat. Bonds, though, are selling off again today, and rates are up 5 or 6 basis points across the board. I have no idea what's going to happen Monday or next week, but it certainly seems to be moving in the direction, broadly stated, as you just covered. And so I, at this point, Jim, I think everybody should, obviously, if you want to hear more right now, they need to go to goldenjackass.com and subscribe to the Hat Trick Letter. But I think everybody should now stand by and wait for you and I to visit again roughly 4 weeks from today, because 4 weeks from today is Good Friday. And that means we got a three-day holiday weekend.
Oh, it'll be time for Easter egg hunting and gouging myself with chocolate bars.
That's right.
Chocolate bunnies.
I bet you
chocolate
would...
bunnies. Chocolate bunnies or Latina bunnies. I don't know. It's a tough choice.
Well, okay. I think it'll be very interesting to get back together, obviously, 4 weeks from today, basically. And I can't wait to see how things have changed between now and then, because that CUNY crude will be trading, and Lord only knows how the situation looked by then. So this has been a wonderful, in-between discussion between the first of the year and Easter, and I think everybody's benefited by listening to it.
Well, here's what I think is going to happen. You know, no one has a crystal ball here, but what's really driving this, what's lighting the fuse, is the long-term Treasury bonds. I wrote a public article in late January about the lit fuse being the Treasury bonds, and it happened pretty much according to how I laid it out. We went up a good 15 basis points in the Treasury, maybe 20 basis points in the 10-year, the TNX. Here's what I think is going to happen. I've been in some email discussions within my group of colleagues, and Rob Kirby is of the opinion that if we get anywhere near 3%, the Exchange Stabilization Fund, the ESF, is going to come in there, manufacture bond demand, and drive the rates back down, and order the Wall Street banks to help them out. In other words, do whatever it does, sell some of your stocks to buy bonds. Okay. So he believes that 3.0 is the electric wire fence on the 10-year yield, the TNX. And I tend to agree. But I have a great deal of respect for him, and he knows the bond market better than I do. But I have my own opinion. And I'm allowed to have my opinion. I'm allowed to be wrong sometimes, but I just don't think the system has been set up in such a way in the last several years since QE came on to defend the 10-year yield, TNX, to defend it between 2.5 and 2.8%. I think the leverage is too great. I think the global confidence is too low. I think the debt volume is too great with the deficits adding on. It's too great. And I think the internal derivative machinery has been strained. I just don't think they're going to be able to successfully keep it below 3.0. We went from just about 3.0, not quite, a couple hairs short, went back down to 2.8. Now we're climbing back up. I think we're going to just dick around here at 2.8 for a while, but then I think we're going to zip above 3.0 next time they have a failed auction. Yeah. And when they zip above 3.0, I think we're going to have some important events take place. It gets opposite. I'm going to talk in terms of bets for lower interest rates. Those who have bets for a lower interest rate at the 3% mark are going to quit and give up. They're going to throw in the towel, and it's going to push rates much higher. I think we're going to have in the next couple months, we're going to have a big move in the Treasury above 3.0, something like 3.25. Don't know exactly. 3.3, 3.2. Don't know exactly. Euro Raj and I are of this mind. Rob Kirby thinks they're going to defend it. I just don't think the derivative machinery is sacred and all that powerful.
Right.
I think it's been strained, and too many factors like what I mentioned, global confidence, new volume coming on, and you got even feeder inflation coming in, price inflation. Oh, gosh, they really screwed around with the new car prices in the CPI index. The car industry announced that it was up a few percent. But in the CPI, they put it down 2%. I mean, they just lie in the CPI, and it's becoming better known. So I think they're going to We tested 3.0. We came back down. I think we're going to, you know, move around here a little while longer. Then we're going to go back up, go above it, and some important players are going to throw in the towel who have bets on lower rates. And it's just not going to work, and they're going to quit. They're going to say, uh-oh, this is not looking good. Another failed auction. And then I'm hearing that we have $600 billion in June for auctions.
Right.
That includes new debt and rollovers.
Right.
By rollover, I mean mature debt that must be refinanced, unless we just want to give them their money. We could just do some raw African Zimbabwe-type inflation.
Do that too.
Oh my God.
Well, no, and Jim, it's good. You're absolutely right. And with the March Fed meeting coming here in the middle of March, basically 2 weeks from whatever that is, next Tuesday and Wednesday, we could get above 3 and hit that 3.25. And it's conceivable we could do that before you and I talk 4 weeks from now.
It happened this month.
Yeah, no, it could very easily all come to pass. And so that's why I thought it was valuable to have this discussion today and get people, if they weren't already watching and thinking and paying attention, to be watching and thinking and paying closer attention in the days ahead. And at this point, unfortunately, I've got a wrap, but I think this has been extremely valuable, and I really, really appreciate you taking the time to stop by on a Friday afternoon and give us all of this, all your latest thoughts on this stuff, because this is a very critical point that we're at, and people need to be, like I said, paying close attention.
They need to pay attention. They need also to look at what happened in the last 3 weeks to push the 10-year yield up toward 3%, and it was failed auctions.
Right, right, right. And you get those failure to delivery things in there, too. No, there's a lot going on, no doubt about it. And it's going to be an interesting month. Jim, I just very much appreciate it. Again, the great Jim Willey, the Golden Jackass. You can find him at goldenjackass.com. His service is the hat trick letter. You want more right now? Go there and subscribe. In the meantime, you're going to have to sit tight for another 4 weeks till we have him back. Jim, you're the best. Have a great weekend.
Oh, see you at Easter. Thanks, Greg.
All right. We'll hop on out of here. Ha, ha, ha.
And I really like your hat.
Hey, thank you. All right, everybody, have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.